The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha. Homage to the Dharma. Homage to the Sangha. Well, I do have a title for this talk. Whether I have the rest of it or not is up to be seen. But the secret of life is will, and words are its key. We're celebrating Achalanatha's festival today. And his mantra is, by our own wills and vigilance, may we our fetters cut away. May we within the temple of our own hearts dwell, amidst the myriad mountains. Hail, hail, hail. And Master Ji always used to say, don't forget the hail. Probably the hardest thing we have to do in life is to see how it is that we create suffering for ourselves. And once we see that, then we have to figure out how to not do that. And so that's what I'm going to be talking about today, that we have to see that. It isn't the external circumstances that create the suffering. The external circumstances simply create the opportunity. And we either take the opportunity or we don't. I just got back from the Hermitage. And it was very easy to practice patience there because the trees weren't making any demands. You have all these billions of trees all sitting still and giving you a good example of how to train. So I get back here and I get 319 emails. That's the way I felt. And about 100 of those in, I got one from the bank and I tried to log on to my bank account. And they asked me all these security questions and I misspelled my mother's maiden name. So they said I had to go into the bank. And I didn't immediately see this as an opportunity to learn patience. I wanted to. My thought was, I just hope the next 250 don't require as much as this one. Every day we're offered opportunities. And Achalanatha, he looks really fierce and looks really mean. The vigilance and the will that we're practicing here is the Buddha's middle way. He tried all sorts of teachings, and the last one was extreme asceticism. And if you tried to look like Fudomyo all the time, you would be in extreme distress. And it's much more important to see that the will we're exercising is the will of willingness. It's a much softer thing than willpower. Somebody was describing recently how he, through his willpower, he could simply stop the thoughts after, you know, just suppress them. And that was a suffering in and of itself. And when you try to repress something that is difficult or unpleasant, it's just the same as indulging it. It's just the other half of the pendulum. And what we have to do is find that we can change our relationship to the thoughts, change our relationship to the difficulties. So my getting upset with the banker was simply a habit. You know, when somebody tells you you can't get what you want and you've got to go to town to correct this, I'm programmed to be impatient. So I think about, you know, I notice all the times, not all the times, but I notice that I'm very prone to being, what's it called? This is what happens when you get old, the word isn't there. Impulsive. I'm very impulsive about stuff. Even as a child. And I was reading Thich Nhat Hanh's book, and he was talking about learning pieces every step. And one of the chapters was about when he was 4 years old, his mother would bring him home a cookie from the market when she would shop. And he would spend the next half an hour eating that cookie as slowly as he could and playing with the dog and sitting in the sun and having just making it this beautiful, fun thing. Well, I don't think I've ever had a meal last more than about 15 minutes. I just slurp it down. And what we have to do is see that we can change how it is that we do things. Because when we act out of these impulsive, emotional reactions, we are acting out of old karma. And until we can see that with compassion, that's the crucial thing. If you look at it with judgment, you simply can't see it. The judgment is already the end of the road. You've already concluded all there is to, that you've got to learn from that situation. And the conclusion is bad person, right? So you can't do anything more than that. Just I learned this from an old horse who, when I was seven, my sister wanted to get this horse, and she was, of course, older and wiser, and she wasn't afraid of horses. I was afraid of the goat with it. And I looked at this horse, and I thought, my God, it's huge, you know. 7-year-old kid, and it was a very old, 20-year-old horse who had been taught all sorts of things, and you could ride him either with an English saddle or a Western saddle, and you could. He would break into 5-gated things every once in a while. And he had learned all sorts of things, and he had no idea what it was. But one day, I was 8 years old. I had gotten over my initial fear of this horse, and so I came home from school, and nobody was home. So I said, "Oh, I'll go for a horseback ride." And I got the saddle on, and I got the bridle on. I was standing right next to the horse, and he stood on the toe of my boot, not actually on my foot, just on the boot. Well, I couldn't push him away. I didn't think about taking my boot off. I finally got really impatient and really angry, and the only thing I could pick up was some little twig, and I started hitting him on the shoulder. I was really angry. It was some sort of signal, and very slowly, he lifts up one knee and puts his knee down. And he lifts up the other knee, puts his knee down. And he put his head all the way down and he bowed. And the screen came down in front of my face. I could see it today. Bad person. You know, my mother said, you know, you couldn't hurt the animals. You could fight with your brother and sister, and we did. But the animals? No. You had to respect the animals and treat them kindly. And so I simply blocked that out. And 25 years later, my mother had just died. I'd gone to England. I was doing some memorial ceremonies for her. And this memory arose. And it was such a beautiful teaching. You know, here's what you do with anger. You bow to it. But the judgment had already concluded there was nothing more to learn. So I just blocked that out. And what you have to see is the judgment keeps you from learning from these mistakes or learning from our past actions. If you judge yourself, then there's nowhere to go. And it's opening ourselves up to these things and seeing where we break the precepts, seeing where we get impatient, seeing where we get angry, seeing where we get frustrated. And Thich Nhat Hanh's definition of patience is that it's the ship and three drums. It's the Chinese character, which is the heart-mind on the bottom and a sharp knife on the top. And his way of interpreting that is you have to open your heart wide enough to hold those sharp or difficult things. And that opening of the heart is what we're learning in meditation. And this is what Achalanatha is teaching us, how to be still, open your heart, keep the precepts. He's holding this rope in his hand. That's the precepts. The sword in the other hand is to cut through the delusion of self. And we have to see that we have that choice. So we sit there, we've made a mistake, or we've gotten angry or fearful or whatever it is that's come up. Just be there with that. That's the truth. That's what's happening. Don't try to pretend it's not happening. How many times have you said, "I'm not angry"? And it's opening ourselves up to the truth. And the truth is that the mind chatters, we act impulsively, we've got all this old karma, our greeds, angers, fears, frustrations, and all of that. And we have to change how we deal with these things. We have to change our perception. Can you welcome the man on the telephone that tells you you have to go to the town? Can you say, "Thank you very much"? I didn't, but I'm learning. And maybe the next time it did happen, I went into the bank and he fixed that problem. Well, I have another bank account that I couldn't get into. I had to go home to get into that bank account. The koan arises naturally in daily life. The things that we run into the self every day. I was putting medicine in the cat's ear for the last couple of days after I got back, and I forgot that I was supposed to wash the ear out first. Just dawned on me this morning. You know? And we just have to look at these things with kindness to ourselves. The discipline in Buddhist practice is not this harsh ascetic discipline. We don't have to beat ourselves up. We have to learn what it is to be kind to ourselves. And the precepts are not some sort of restraint. Well, they are some sort of restraint. But they're not a restraint that is going to keep you from being at peace with yourself. They're a restraint that shows you how to act like a Buddha. And the precepts are not demanded of us by God. We undertake this practice so we can learn how to convert our suffering into compassion and love and wisdom. And it's up to each person to make this effort of will to do that. And the secret here is that we already have the Buddha nature. We can't get something. Western society comes with this assumption that there's something wrong with us just because we're born. And in Buddhism, we believe in fundamental goodness, not fundamental badness. And so that fundamental goodness means that every one of us has the Buddha nature. Everyone has just as much of that Buddha nature as you need to deal effectively with this conversion of suffering. One of my favorite stories, and I've said this in a number of talks, is the story of Yakuza-san, who studied with Sekito for 20 years, and he wasn't getting it. And he was getting frustrated. Sekito finally sends him over to his friend Basso. And Basso undoubtedly knew the problem. But he tells Basso, "Well, I've studied for 20 years. I've read everything I could of Buddhist teachings. I don't get it." And Basso looks at him with a little grin on his face, saying, "Sometimes I raise the eyebrows of old Shakyamuni and I blink. And sometimes I don't. And sometimes it's good to do, and sometimes it's not." He said, "What do you think?" "Well, the penny dropped." And Yaku-san realized that he was trying to get something. He said, "When I was with Sekito, I was like a mosquito trying to bite an iron bull." He wanted to get blood out of this iron bull, rather than seeing that his training was the manifestation of the blood of the Buddhas. And in doing his training, he'd actually been acting on his own enlightenment without realizing it. Because Dogen talks about that the training is enlightenment. And the doing of the practice is in fact an enlightened act. To sit in meditation, to keep the precepts, to do the very best you can with these difficulties in daily life. Even if you fall down and fail 100 times, if you still get up and do it, This is enlightenment. It's not something that you have to get or add on. You have to open your heart. It's there already, but the self is putting this little whatever, this filter on top of that, so that you can't get to that open heart unless you choose, make that act of will to open that heart. And all of you have done that because you're here. Everybody who comes has had to listen to something inside themselves, or they wouldn't be here, because we don't go beating people over the head saying, you have to go to Shasta Abbey and meditate, or we'll beat you some more. Took me years to go to a Zen center because I didn't want to be hit by a stick. So what is the use of going to a place where they're going to come around and hit you? Well, I had to be desperate enough. And I finally got desperate enough. Remember Master Jiyu, when I did get desperate enough, was there. And this is the door to the unknown, this practice. We were talking about, I was talking about with somebody recently. When I lost this job, I was upset. I walked around San Francisco for 5 hours or so, and I came across Zen Center, so I tried to go in. The door was closed. So I said, go away, come back in a week. I got a half a block away, and I remember the story from Kafka about the man from the country who comes to the gate of the law. And the door is open, and the man looks something like Fudo. And just explains to him that there, through this door, there are 1,000 other doors, and each one has a guard that's just as mean and ugly as I am, and if not worse. And the man is scared away, and he keeps coming back and gets scared away. Finally, he's about to die, and the guard comes over and says, that door was meant only for you. So I thought, I better go back and try again. So I went to another door, and there wasn't a sign on it, and I knocked on this other door, and they invited me in, and I got a cookie and a cup of tea, and got told that I could come back at 5:30 the next morning, which I did. After the sitting, they told me that Reverend Master Jiyu, who's known at the time as Roshi Kennett, was giving a talk, which I went to, and she talked about the man in Germany who, during World War II, he was an SS officer, and he wasn't convicted of war crimes because his job was to mete out sentences for people who had been convicted of espionage, and he had two doors behind his desk. And he said, they were both painted black. He said, this is the firing squad. I can't tell you what this one is. You get your choice. And this is our choice in life. We can just do the same old thing, go to the firing squad and die at the end of our life and do it all over again. Or we can go through the door of the unknown. She said, this is Zen practice. And I was thinking, what kind of torture is going to be worse than the firing squad? Well, he wasn't tried as a war criminal because he had a car with its engine running, waiting to take anybody across the Swiss border who had the courage to take it. And I don't know how many, if any, took it. But this is our choice in life. We're born with a bunch of karma, and we either convert that and do something about the self, or we die and come back again and do it again. Firing squad or whatever. It might be cancer this time or heart attack. And our choice is to decide, you know, what am I going to do with my life? How do I see my purpose? Because we do have a purpose. And that spiritual purpose is open to anyone who has the courage to go through the door to the unknown. But you've got to confront Fudo here. And he does look fierce, but he's an aspect of compassion. And we like compassion to look like this beautiful lady that Master Mogakyen painted. But compassion is sometimes the traffic jam when you're in a hurry. the man at the bank who tells you have to come in. If we can see these little difficulties as an opportunity to learn, rather than somebody's getting at me, or I was at the Hermitage once, and I saw this really big snake catch a fish, and I just couldn't leave it. So I went and got the snake grabbers, and I knew I could get him because he was distracted. And the snake grabbers put a padded thing around the snake's neck and hold him. So I got him on the grabbers, and he dropped the fish. Fortunately, he went back in the pond. But he was angry. I'd just taken his lunch, probably his dinner too. And he was wiggling, and he was taller than I was long. And I got him in the bucket, and it was a special bucket for this kind of thing that had a little thing in it so he could get air. And I got the lid on, and I went into the house to get the car key to drive him away. And I came back out, and I was kind of upset. You know, this was a big snake. And I tripped, and I knocked the bucket over, and he got loose. I had to go back, get the snake grabbers, find him again. It was an open area. He was having a hard time on the gravel. Got him in there. He didn't want that lid on, and he was upset. And then I had to ride in the car with this snake that was upset, and I knew there was a little hole there in the lid, and I didn't know. I didn't want this big, angry snake to be running loose in the car. So we did the scripture for the removal of disasters at this ceremony. Well, I did that for about 20 minutes that I took him down to be far enough away so he wouldn't come back. So I went down this forest path, and this very narrow little path, and I opened the lid up, and there he was, totally relaxed. He was very happy to be in this little cave. He's all curled up. He was more relaxed and at ease than I was. And he was teaching me, you know, cool it, you know, there's no problem here. So I said, okay, but he didn't want to get out at that point. So I turned the bucket over and planted him there on the ground, but I put him between me and the car. So I had to get a stick, and I just kind of urged him to find another place to play. But everything is there teaching us. We're the ones who have to learn. Whether it's the man at the bank, whether it's the snake, whether it's the bad weather, whether it's loss of a job, whether it's not knowing what to do with my life, whatever the dilemma happens to be. Lately I've been hearing people talking about how their mind is racing around and they can't sit because they can't stop that. And you can't stop that mind, and you don't have to try. You have to shift your attention. It's like thinking that you own your mind and that you can do something because it's there inside and you think you own it. Well, you don't. You don't have a deed to it. You don't have a mortgage on it. You don't even have a registration certificate. And what's important is to recognize that that mind is just babbling on. And the more you train, the more you meditate, the less energy you give to that mind. And what you're doing is, in meditation, is just sit. So instead of just focus and think, just sit. Let that mind do its babbling over here and don't get involved in it. You can't actually make it go. Well, I was hearing of somebody who suppressed it enough to make it stop, and it was a suffering in and of itself. So you don't suppress it. You don't get rid of it. You change your relationship to it. It's like Yakuza-san being able to see the Buddha nature not only in himself but all beings. And you can't do it perfectly. Sometimes the will is adequate and sometimes it's not. Sometimes the words are adequate, sometimes they're not. Sometimes both will and words are adequate, sometimes neither are so. And you can't depend on anything, either inside or outside. Everything is in the process of change. And I was reading a book by Ajahn Chah, and he talked about how you can't understand the Dharma through words. You can only understand it when you put the words into practice. The Buddha taught the Kalamas, who went to the Kalamas, and he asked them, or they asked him, how do we know what's good to believe? We get all these different people coming here, and they all have different teachings, and we don't know what to do with that. And he said, well, take the teaching and put it into practice and see if it works. That's frequently translated as the Buddha said, don't believe anything I said just because I said it. But that's not what he said. He said, put it into practice, because this is how you'll understand the Dharma. You hear the words, but the practice is something else. If you practice with those words, you'll start to see those words differently. There's the shift in perception that accompanies the doing of this practice. Because when you can shift from, I don't want this to happen, to, okay, let's try this out. For 20 years I was in a temple in Santa Barbara, and I'd figured it by the time I got back here that I'd washed enough plastic bags. So I said, I don't do bags. About 10 years into this, I get this very clear message that says, you're missing out on something here. Still took me another 5 years to change that, to actually admit that I do bags, because I do them when I'm at the Hermitage or when I'm somewhere where you have to. But when there's something you don't like or don't want to do, that's a clue that there's self involved. And you have to see how that's still holding on to some anger. In my case, it was more like impatience, you know. I don't even like plastic bags because they're collecting in the Pacific Ocean in an area that's as big as Texas. And somebody's going to have to figure out how to deal with these billions of plastic bags that are... And I was thinking about that the other day and realizing that I added one when I was in 1984. I was scattering some ashes from a friend who had died and with his family, and they wanted me to open the bag and out of the ocean and scatter his ashes in the ocean. And I did that, and I did a little prayer. Then I didn't know what to do with the bag. And I realized, oh, I had just dropped the bag in the water because I didn't know what to do with it. And that wasn't a good thing to do. And it's just noticing, you know, whether it's from 30 years ago or whether it's from yesterday or this morning, noticing that wasn't a good thing to do. But noticing it in a compassionate way. Not, you're a bad person, you put that bag in the ocean. It's, oh, I don't want to do that anymore. And this is the shift in perception from bad person to, oh, I can learn from this. And we have to be able to make this shift. And the way you come to the place where it's like having the car in reverse, you got to put it into neutral. Meditation is neutral. So you've got to bring your stillness to that place and then see if there's another gear you can put the car in here that says, I'm going to not act out of anger here. I'm going to let go of that fear. I made a list of my fears once, and that all happened in some form or another, and yeah, they weren't so bad. Still, snake in your hand that's wriggling around and bigger than you are, fear comes up, okay? So sometimes the will is adequate, and sometimes it's not. Sometimes words are adequate, sometimes they're not. Sometimes will and words are adequate, and sometimes they're not. The secret here is that you have what you need to realize your full spiritual potential as human beings. It's inside there already, and you have to access it. And you access it through the practice. And Fudomyo looks really scared and mean, and so does the snake, or so does whatever it is that you don't want to do or don't like. Ajahn Chah makes a big thing about, if you don't like something, do it. You know, because if there's something you haven't dealt with in terms of letting go of the self, well, it's going to keep coming up until you look at it. And you've got to look at it with compassion. You've got to see that you can change how you see that. You can change the person that you don't like and start to see with the eyes of the Buddha. That person has the Buddha nature. Even though some Buddhas teach us what not to do, they're still Buddhas. Remember, Master Ji used to say that about Richard Nixon. Well, we have another current example is helping us learn that some Buddhas are teaching us what not to do. They're still Buddhas. And they're still making their mistakes publicly, which is actually a gift to us, because we can see when somebody makes mistakes like this, oh, I don't want to do that. You know, and it can encourage us to realize, if I am concerned only with myself, how can I help all beings? You know, what do I have to do to help all beings? Well, you've got this filter of self. It's like living in a cage. And you can only see as far as the bars of that cage. And you're the one that has the key to that cage. You can change what it is that you do. You can change how you think about things. You can change how you deal with the stuff that's difficult or unpleasant. You can avoid getting too excited about the good things and too angry about the bad things. You can find the middle way. And this is what the Buddha's teaching us. It's not ascetic. You don't have to beat your head against the wall in order to find the truth. You don't have to starve yourself like the Buddha tried to do. You have to find the middle way. What's reasonable? What's helpful? How can I learn to be at ease? Because I can't help others until I can find the Buddha nature within myself. But it helps to try. Even if you don't feel like you have the Buddha nature, do something for somebody else. Give the person on the street with his sign that says he's out of money, give him some money, or give him whatever, give him a smile. Treat him with respect. Treat him with kindness. Treat yourself with kindness. See where it is that you create suffering, but see it with kindness, because until you do that, you can't change it. Volition is, karma is created by volition. It's your intent that's important. The Buddha's teaching about karma came out of a teaching of karma in India at the time. Some people believe that if you accidentally stepped on an ant, you killed it and you had the same karma as if you intentionally tried to kill it. And he said, no, if you don't have any intention of hurting the ant or anything else, that is a different karma. You might see it later and realize that wasn't a good thing to do, but it doesn't create the karmic consequences of intentionally, volitionally trying to create harm. And we do it out of reaction. I recently a mosquito was on my wrist, and I just went like that, just instinct, you know, just this jerk reaction, and realized that that was, in a way, it was intentional. I wanted him not to bite me. And you have to recognize that and just be honest with yourself. It actually is such a relief when you're not trying to pretend this didn't happen. You know, but it's not always easy to be that honest. And you have to train yourself. And this is what our practice is about. But it comes out of compassion. And Master Chushin's phrase about the radiant Buddha mind which fills and contains all things, this is a clue. Everything, every being, everything is filled with compassion and love and wisdom. It fills us, it fills the universe, but we don't necessarily recognize that. We're not seeing with the eyes of the Buddha. We don't realize that this little cage of self is keeping us from realizing this infinite compassion and love and wisdom that fills the universe and fills us, fills everything. Oops. This is the microphone that allows you to hear me because I don't speak loudly enough. I mumble because I'm lazy. But this is about the secret of life. And the secret is that you don't lack for anything. The secret is that you have all you need and you have to practice to find that. You have to do the training that opens the door so that happy meeting can take place. And I'm going to leave it at that.